So the giant American bookseller Borders has filed for bankruptcy in the US. Borders, which is the third largest bookseller in the US, has filed Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection. The move comes after the bookseller failed to get publishers to agree to a plan to restructure its debt, which reportedly totals more than $500 million. Borders has for years struggled to adapt to a changing book industry, losing a lot of money in the transition from print to digital products, including e-books. In 2009, the group closed 204 stores in the US in an effort to reduce its debt. Now Borders is likely to close another 200 stores, leaving some 20,000 people out of a job. So how did the US giant Borders get itself into such deep financial difficulties, and how much of an impact has e-books had on their demise? Joe Checkler is a senior reporter with Dow Jones Daily Bankruptcy Review. He's been closely following the story and he joins us now from New York. Joe, welcome to the Book Show.
Hi, nice to be here.
Joe, why has Borders come undone?
Well, many reasons. You know, in their bankruptcy papers, they cite lower consumer spending and the fierce competition from both online and other physical stores. But, you know, of course, that's a little bit of an oversimplification. People are spending less money, but they're not necessarily stopping reading. They're going to places like Amazon.com where, you know, the prices are always lower and there's free shipping. And obviously the ebook market is something that, you know, both Amazon and Apple and a lot of others have, they kind of jumped the gun on Borders, and Borders was a little bit late to adapt. And I think, you know, part of it is, you know, today's consumer, and maybe Borders is a little bit late in understanding this, they don't really care about how am I going to view this book. They want what they want when they want it, and sometimes it's on their Kindle, sometimes it's the physical book, sometimes they wake up in the morning and they fire up their iPhone and they want to read it on that. And I think that, you know, some companies realized that quicker than others, that people really were just, they were consuming it every which way, and they wanted those options. And when those options were kind of taken away by companies who weren't, you know, adapting to them, you know, Borders realized it a little bit too late, and they were already pretty damaged. And as you said, they were in heavy, heavy debt, and they weren't able to restructure it, and they had to file for, you know, what we call here Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection.
And what does it mean, Chapter 11 bankruptcy?
Well, even in the U.S., people hear Chapter 11 bankruptcy and they think that means a company is going out of business, and that's not necessarily the case. You know, Chapter 11 gives a company the opportunity to reorganize itself. It puts the company in the hands of a bankruptcy court. These judges in New York and Delaware especially, they have, you know, pretty broad powers. And what usually happens is they get what's called a debtor in possession loan, which is the case here. And one of their existing creditors says, well, I'm probably not going to get my money back if I do nothing, so maybe I'll take a chance that this company is going to be successful in reorganizing. I'll lend them money at a high rate, hope that they can make themselves leaner. And, you know, that puts that the lender, in this case GE Capital, in a position where they have a little bit of power in terms of getting, you know, their money back first. It puts them higher on the totem pole. And the company uses that money, you know, to fund its bankruptcy.
And do we know how Borders is going to spend this $500 million financing?
Well, you know, the first thing they might want to do is buy a Kindle from Amazon. But after they do that, they're going to use the money to pay their employees. As you said, they have nearly 20,000. That number is going to go a little bit lower because they've, you know, 200 stores are going to be closing starting Saturday. I mean, there's going to be liquidation. But they're also going to have to keep paying the vendors in the stores that they actually do still, you know, want to keep those core stores and get the new Harry Potter or get the new Tom Clancy or whatever people are reading. They want to get the new copies of those books in their stores that they're actually going to focus on. And so, you know, they use the money also to maintain the space, you know, the leases they have. They want to maintain those spaces as much as possible. So that's what they use the money for.
But Borders last month announced it would delay payments to its vendors, landlords, and key creditors. Its five largest unsecured creditors are the book publishers Penguin, Putnam, Hachette Book Group, Simon & Schuster, Random House, and HarperCollins Publishers. So obviously they're going to pay some of them if they want the big new book. But any reaction from the other publishers?
Well, yes. I mean, like you said, they stopped paying the publishers in December, and some of the publishers, you know, David Shanks, who's the CEO of Penguin, he said they're going to continue closely working with Borders, and my colleague Jeff Trachtenberg at the Wall Street Journal actually wrote a nice story about the publishers for today's paper, saying this border situation could actually cause some consolidation in the industry, in the publishing industry, because it's kind of, not that they haven't had wake-up calls before, but it's kind of maybe a little bit of a wake-up call. Oh my goodness, one of the largest bricks-and-mortar bookstores is possibly not going to be our customer anymore after a while. You know, maybe it's time for us to kind of not be in risky situations ourselves, and that could lead to some consolidation.
You said that perhaps the biggest single reason for the bookseller to go under is that they didn't go to digital media early enough. Sounds like a bit ham-fisted when they finally decided to go digital. What was their story?
Well, I think they were. I think if you had a, you know, if there's one single reason why they went under, I mean, obviously, you know, it's sometimes it's hard to sort out what are the causes and what are the effects, but I would say, you know, they were too late in recognizing the implications of e-commerce. I wouldn't blame e-books for why they went under as much as I would blame them not understanding that customers were buying the physical books online, and that kind of it led to this trickle effect, and then the online, the ones who were focusing online, like Amazon, were like, oh, now we can go into e-books, you know, and if you go into something halfway and aren't giving the customers everything they want at that time, people don't even realize they'd have e-books for a while. And then, you know, a couple of years ago and last year, they really beefed up the business. I just think it was a little too late, and they were, like I said, too late in recognizing the implications of e-commerce. And now that's why we're here in February of 2011, and they're in bankruptcy.
Well, Borders was leading the market in the 1990s as one of the original big book superstores that rewarded shoppers by offering thousands of book and music titles in a single location. What about the drop of DVD sales and music sales into online downloads? That must have been a big part of what Borders was offering customers that went downwards too.
Yes, they were not a player in, they were not a player in online digital downloads. And to be honest, I don't know. I mean, that's one thing that I haven't in covering this story. I'm not sure, you know, where they are with it now. They don't really talk about it that much. They had these big, gigantic, I mean, I remember in the 90s, I would go to these big Borders, you know, half the store was music at some point. They had all those little listening stations, and I was, you know, in high school and loved putting the headphones on because, you know, at that point, you know, regular consumers in the mid and late 90s, we didn't understand that. I didn't know what an MP3 player was when I was, you know, 20 years old in 1999. But neither did Borders, but some companies did. Some companies were like, well, we have these little MP3 players. Maybe this is how people are going to want to consume music. You know, those big giant iPods that Apple was making at the time, the early adopters had, they were the ones who were smart. And, you know, again, Borders just wasn't, they didn't adapt quick enough.
Now Borders says that it aims to stay viable by enhancing its customer rewards program, strengthening its e-book business and expanding more into non-book products. I mean, do you think this is going to work, this shift away from its origins as a bookstore?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, to remain viable, you know, what they have to do is they have these stores and they have to use the stores as a showcase more than, you know, an all-or-nothing proposition for the business. I think that, like you said, you know, they want to show more products. They want to go more, you know, here's our e-book store. But I think, you know, again, my colleague Jeff Trachtenberg made a great point in his story. He said there's really no marketing substitute. He quoted somebody who said there's no marketing substitute for big tables of books in a store. I mean, that still grabs us. I don't care who we are. It's the best way for us to get interested in books and interested in reading is going to the store and you know, seeing the physical books. But the problem is, you know, you have to use it as a showcase and kind of lead people onto your website and let them know that, you know, we're not just a one-channel retailer. We're a multi-channel retailer who's going to give you these books at however you want it. And for them, they need to recognize that, you know, they have to use their stores to their advantage.
What do you see, Joe Chekler, as the implications for other big chain booksellers in the US, like Barnes & Noble. So, I mean, Barnes & Noble is operating the same market, so they're obviously not doing the same thing so far.
Right. Well, you have to imagine this helps Barnes & Noble in the short run, but they better learn the lessons. They better keep focusing on e-books and e-book readers, which, you know, they have been. And online reward programs, both of these companies have that. And I think sometimes what gets overlooked in this whole thing is the idea of, like I just said, you know, using your physical presence to your advantage. Have a cashier tell a customer, you know, in a non-obtrusive way what they can do online. You know, what if I go up and I'm buying a book and the cashier says to me, hey, you know, here's a coupon just for coming into the store. You can use it online or in the store. I mean, that's the thing. People are, they're going to still make impulse buys. You can succeed with stores. I mean, I don't know about you, but I'm pretty impulsive sometimes. Sometimes, you know, I can't get my mind out of wanting to buy a book, and I go to the store that day, and I want it now. I think, you know, sometimes tomorrow is a day late. And so Borders, and Barnes & Noble, excuse me, they should learn some of the lessons and say, you know, have the store, but recognize that that window for that impulse buying is closing. You can go on Amazon right now and get a book that's coming out, in a month, and you can get it at your door the day it comes out. I mean, that's for free shipping. I mean, that kind of closes that impulse buying window that retailers used to always tout when they said, well, yeah, we have the physical presence. That's a lot better than having to go online and wait for it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and just in our last minute, what about the smaller independent bookstores in some of the smaller U.S. cities where Borders is closing? Are they likely to pick up new customers?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it depends on the store. I mean, the advantage those types of stores have is that, you know, people develop attachments to them. You know, they get to know the employees. They don't mind paying an extra dollar or two sometimes or waiting an extra day because they feel like they're, you know, doing something good for the world. I'm going to the Ma and Pa bookstore. You know, an independent bookstore can embrace that and maximize that. And a lot of those guys are going to be fine. I mean, one that tries to be a Borders or try to be a Barnes & Noble or expand and buy more property, you know, that's how they get into trouble for the independents. But if you have a knowledgeable staff, you know, people are coming into those stores because they want that personal experience. I think there's something to be said for that.
I mean, even Amazon tries to be intimate, don't they? They just say, hey, listen, if you buy this book, what about these ones? I mean, they do actually understand that, you know, the intimate whisper in your ear is what you're looking for.
Right. I mean, sometimes, you know, if you bought one thing for you, if you buy one thing as a gag gift and one thing for yourself, you sometimes get funny recommendations, but at least they're trying. Right?
Yeah. All right. So the lesson here for Borders customers, I suppose, in the US at least, and in Australia, which we'll find out shortly, is I suppose if you've got a Borders book voucher, you might need to cash it in now.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of times when a company files bankruptcy here in the US, they have a plan in place to kind of reorganize themselves right away, pay back the creditors. That's not the case here. They're closing 200, and you know, part of this order is there's 75 more stores that they have the right to close in the next 30 days in the U.S. You know, that would be, you know, 275 of their 642 stores. So, yeah, I mean, my sister lives in Toms River, New Jersey. You know, her store's not closing, but I told her ahead of time, like, you better get that gift card that I gave you ready because you're going to need it.
All right, Joe Checkler, thank you so much for speaking to us on The Book Show.
Thank you so much. Have a good one.
Joe Checkler, senior reporter with the New York financial information firm, Dow Jones. Now to the Australian situation. As mentioned, Red Group, the owners of Australia's oldest bookstore chain, Angus and Robertson, and the Australian Borders Bookshops, was placed into voluntary administration last night. John Page is the president of the Australian Booksellers Association. He joins me now to explain what's happening to Red Group. John, welcome to The Book Show.
Good morning.
You've been listening to Joe Checkler on the American Borders. How's the situation with Red Group different in Australia?
It's different in that there's two sides to the Red Group. They bought the Borders Australian stores, I think, about 3 or 4 years ago. And Borders has always been a different beast in Australia to what it was in the US. It wasn't, you know, literally when the Borders in the US, there are 600 stores and there's only 26 here. So the scale of the number of stores was never replicated in Australia like it was there. But the Red Group also own the Angus and Robinson chain, which is also made up of a lot of franchises, which it doesn't exist in America, the whole franchise thing. So the thing with the Red Group going into administration is it's not only affecting stores that they own and run, but this is also affecting some franchise stores that are also run by small business people. So it has a wider ranging effect.
Is it that there are too many bookstores that our small market couldn't sustain, Angus and Robertson or the Borders stores?
I don't think that's the case at all. I think 2010 was the first year in 10 years that the book market actually contracted here. So for the last 10 years, of which Borders has been here for 12 now, the market has been growing and growing. So I don't think there was a case of too many stores. I think other factors have come into play here, and I think the biggest factor on this has been the Australian dollar.
Mm-hmm.
But also I think the online retailing in general has changed what a bricks and mortar store means. I mean, the Borders model was a large retail space and being able to stock as much as possible. Now, the internet and online stores, they're not limited by space. They have infinite space, so they can stock absolutely everything. So that edge that the big, large retail store has been lost to online, because online isn't hampered by space at all. And I think that's been one of the factors. But the major factor here for the Red Group has been the Australian dollar and the impact that has had on their business and the impact it's having on all businesses in Australia at the moment.
Angus and Robertson have been owned by many companies, News Limited, HarperCollins. They were bought by Red Group, which also bought Borders when the American company was having difficulty. Why did they make that decision? Why did Red Group do that?
Well, I think they saw an opportunity. I mean, Borders is a big, strong, recognisable brand around the world. And, you know, no one buys a business thinking it's not going to work. And I think they saw an opportunity to expand the Borders brand in Australia and use that in conjunction with their Angus and Robertson brand.
The Red Group, though, has been in trouble for some time, haven't they?
They've been in trouble for the last 6 months. I think it was about 18 months ago they were actually looking to even float the company. So they were in a strong position then, but, you know, the tide has turned in retail. I mean, the GFC, I think, scuttled their plans. I'm not on the inside, but I'm just speculating. But then last year, 2010, was a very tough retail year that got tougher as we led into Christmas. And Christmas is the big time for books. And without Christmas, there's... it makes life very, very hard for the bookseller.
But what does it say about their business model, though? Because there are other big booksellers in Australia who aren't in receivership or in voluntary receivership.
Their Borders arm was probably bigger than most. I mean, Dimmicks are the other big chain, and they have kind of the big, in Sydney at least anyway, they have a big city store in George Street. But they're mainly a franchise business, so they haven't really gone down that massive retail space scheme, which was the Borders model, and it's hard to say which aspect of Red Group has been the one that has led to this. I mean, the franchise area could have still been strong, but it's been impacted by another aspect of the business. And it's not that the Red Group hasn't been innovative. They've probably been the leader in the last 12 months on ebooks in Australia. They partnered with Canadian bookseller Kobo, and had a really strong launch of ebooks into the Australian market, and we're doing some really exciting things with ebooks. So it wasn't like the Borders in the US who were kind of caught out. The Red Group here were trying to innovate and trying to get into the new digital area.
So what are the implications for the Australian bookselling market? I mean, to what extent will the collapse of Red Group affect the other booksellers and publishers and writers?
Yeah, it's going to have a big flow-on effect. I mean, Red Group accounts for, I think, about 23% of the market. Now, that's a quarter of the market that may go. And, of course, it will. You know, some of that will go to Dimmicks, it'll go to independents, and it'll go online as well, on offshore. And that's what the impact's going to be, is how much of Red Group's business is going to be lost to offshore retailers. But then there's also the impact of what money is owed to publishers and whether the publishers can sustain that loss. I think the small and medium publishers are probably the most under threat, but it is going to have an impact on everyone, because the publishers are going, no business can sustain a loss.
So when will we know how much is owed to those publishers?
From what I've read in the media, there's going to be a creditors meeting in a month's time. So the Borders stores and all the Angus and Robinson stores are still open for business today, and they will still be trading, and then a decision will be made after that creditors meeting.
You know, when you said that Red Group was a strong retailer with e-books, that they had a relationship with a Canadian e-book company, Kobo, well, why didn't that help them if they were sort of earlier adopters of that technology?
from what I've heard, their online side of the business was the strongest part of their business. Through their physical book website, they'd been doing an offer on price matching the Amazon price, and that had been highly successful. And the selling of the e-books has also been highly successful, but the cost involved in setting all that up is quite a burden, and maybe that was the cost in investing in getting into e-books was too much to bear. But from what I've heard, the sales were, it wasn't a case of not selling enough e-books or not selling enough books online, but it may be a return on investment issue. I mean, people think that digital costs less and there's less overheads, but there is quite a significant cost in investing in setting a business up to sell e-books.
Now, in 2009, of course, there was a push to change the parallel importation laws in Australia. Some publishers are saying that this was a factor in the demise of Red Group. What do you think?
Oh, definitely. And it comes back, again, to the Australian dollar. The fact that the Australian dollar is on parity with the US and prices overseas became cheaper, the parallel importation restrictions meant that the retailers here could not take advantage of those cheaper prices, but consumers could, so we were unable to compete on price. And then coupled with that, the fact that retailers aren't able to buy overseas meant that there's no competitive pressures to force the publishers to bring their prices down.
But the American borders, of course, failed, and they were in an open market, so it just can't be blamed on parallel importation.
The US market is a closed market and the UK market is a closed market. They're not an open book market in the US. One of the big examples is the Stieg Larsson book. The American market got The Girl Who Kicked a Hornet's Nest. They were the last English-speaking country in the world to get that book published there, and no retailer in that country could import copies in from the UK or anywhere else.
Okay. Well, the federal government set up the Book Industry Study Group to report back on the digital future of e-books and other factors in the Australian book industry. What are the implications of the demise of Red Group for that study group's report?
Well, this is going to have a big impact, and it's a big example of if the industry isn't ready for the digital future, there might not be an industry to go into the future. And my concern at the moment with the ISG group is that it might not be moving fast enough to keep up with what's going on the ground in book retailing at the moment, because we're struggling now, and if this group isn't going to be delivering a report until the end of the year, that might be too late for everybody.
So what are the impact, would you think, on writers?
Yeah, well, you know, the industry all works together, and if there's not local retailers to sell local writers' books, who are they going to sell their books to? I mean, Amazon aren't going to be pushing the next Tim Winton through their website because that's not their primary focus of their market. It's local retailers that help grow local authors and promote local authors, and if we damage the local retail landscape too much, that's going to be lost, and it's going to be harder for not only Australian writers to publish books, but for Australian readers to access those books.
So it's a big moment, isn't it?
It is a big moment. It's very concerning, and at the Australian Booksellers Association, we're following everything minute by minute and seeing what we can do to help our members and hopefully still sustain the future of bookselling in Australia.
All right, John Page, thanks a lot for being on The Book Show.
Not a problem. Thank you very much.
John Page is the president of the Australian Booksellers Association. This is The Book Show on ABC Radio National. I'm Ramona Koval. If you'd like to comment on what you've heard so far, you can do so by looking at our webpage at abc.net.au/rn/bookshow and making your comment there.